Welcome back to the Love Intently podcast, friends. I'm Sophie Kwok, your host, and our mission is to empower thriving relationships. And this week, we have a Korean drama starring Teresa Kwan, a Korean American from Texas who describes her life as a Korean drama, and you'll see why. In this episode, we dive into the story of how she came to meet and marry her husband. And believe me, my jaw dropped only 10 times the first time I heard this, so I'm pretty sure yours will drop a few times too. Especially if you don't know much about Asian cultures and customs and Asian moms. I'm Chinese, and let's just say their Asian moms did not make their love life easy. She goes deep into how they met, their super awkward first date, but somehow ended up lasting till 6 a.m., meeting the parents, them breaking up, them getting back together, all the way till when they got married. But what I love about Teresa isn't just her love story, but also her heart behind empowering other people to build thriving businesses and teams. She also shares her story and motivation behind building her online consultancy and coaching business, Daringly Great Leadership. After years in the startup world, she became aware of the toxic habits people often develop when there's so much pressure to make a profit. They lose themselves and lose touch with their families. And Teresa wanted to live in a world where she truly had work-life balance, where it's not all about profit, and where teams build real bonds and not just transactional relationships. She wanted to work with others who shared the same values, so she took her love of leadership development and combined it with her 25 years of working experience to coach online entrepreneurs to become transformational leaders, to build their dream teams and scale their businesses. And right now, she is offering her free Ultimate Dream Team Hiring Roadmap, which we will link in the show notes, or you can find on her website. So I'm just going to leave it at that, because Teresa's stories are phenomenal and she is a far better teller of them than I am. So without further ado, here is our conversation.
How we met. Honestly, it was completely on accident. There was probably no way for us to meet. Honestly, we had different circles. We had no occupations to even cross paths. And the reason being is because I had just moved to Korea. I just finished graduate school. It was after the recession and jobs were blah, and there was no endowment for my PhD. So what did I do? I hopped to Korea, and I had an opportunity to work there. And as I was there, having a great time doing work, and I had a friend who basically asked me to be Cyrano, and in the process, I met my husband. So it was basically through an app, and I know these days Tinder, Bumble, like what app isn't there about meeting people? But this wasn't actually a dating app. It was more of a like who's here or something. I don't even remember. But long story short, it's just like it helps you GPS. Like, are you in the same coffee shop? Like, do you have similar interests? And I think the people who initially made it was trying to help people meet others to not be lonely, but maybe not as lonely as some people were using it to be. So,
okay, you met on this app, and then how did that lead to a first date to where you are now?
Well, honestly, that it took a lot longer than just like meet on an app, because to be honest, like I said, my friend was asking me to be Cyrano. She had an Android and I had an iPhone. It's one of those things. And apparently this app was just for the iPhone. And she grabbed my phone, she made a profile, and she put my picture on there, and she's like, okay, you're cuter than me, and I really want to meet these guys. So what I want you to do is I'll point out the ones that I like, and then you hit them up for a conversation, ask them for a drink, ask them if they have a friend, and we're going to double date. And I was like, what? You're crazy pants. Like, I don't even like internet date. This is like not a thing. It freaks me out. And like, some Korean things, Korean social dynamics. She was older than me, and there's this whole thing of you have to do things for the people who are older than you. And so she's like, just do it. It's like, gonna be harmless. And I was like, okay, fine. And so I was being Cyrano for her, and she, you know, it was ridiculous. I would text, I would like message these guys, whatever she's telling me to message. She's like, what did they say? And then she's like, okay, send this back. And oh my gosh, it was so crazy. And every time I opened the app, of course, there were these incoming hellos, and most of them were like, hey, baby, you know, like, what you doing tonight? Want to meet up for a drink? And I'm like, delete, 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 trash, gross, yuck. And one of them was, I hope you had a nice day. And I thought, in the sea of like, you know, half naked pictures and like, come have a drive with me, there was this like innocuous message. So I didn't delete it. And every time I went back, I would go and see this message. And I'm like, okay, well, I checked his profile. And then I was like, oh, poor guy. Like, he has no game and he has no idea what he's doing. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to message him back and be nice. Like, I feel bad for him. So I messaged back, thanks. I hope you had a nice day. And so that actually went on for like a couple weeks where I would check these messages and he would just have like one message that was like, hey, I hope you had time to have a nice lunch today, or it's cold outside, dress warm. And I'm like, who is this person? Like,
how sweet.
Yeah. So, but eventually I got to the point where I was like, I can't, this is ridiculous. Why am I even agreeing to do this for my friends? And I was like, oh my God, I'm not a pushover type. I don't get it. This is disgusting. And no offense for people who like date on apps and hook up, like that's not, just not my, no, thank you. I'm a good girl. So, I'm like old fashioned romantic. So I let him know, and mind you, I still didn't know his name. He never asked me my name. We just went by profile, you know, and we never, it was, there was no exchange of personal information whatsoever for these 2 weeks. So I just kindly let him know, because every time I opened the app, we would do an exchange. I would say, hey, so I'm actually going to leave this app, and it's been really nice to chat with you. It's nice to have someone who's kind and not gross. And so I just wanted to wish you luck. And he said, oh, but can we still chat? And I'm like, oh, like, no. And there's a app called KakaoTalk, and it's the Korean version of WhatsApp, or in Line actually is Korean too. But he was like, well, can I have your KakaoTalk ID? And I thought, okay, I'll get him off my back and then I'll just block him. And that led to more exchange of messages. And my friends would be like, who are you messaging? Because it has.
Why are you smiling?
Why are you smiling? Like, who, what is going on? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And they're like, well, who is it? And I'm like, I actually really don't know. And they're like, what? Why are you messaging this guy? You don't even know it. But like, what's his name? I don't know. And they're like, what? Like, how long have you been messaging? It's been a few weeks. And they're like, and you don't know his name. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, does he know your name? No. So my friends basically were like, okay, you're crazy pants. You either like him and you're going to like, you know, either he's somebody that you're going to meet in real life and not just like chat bot it with this person or whatever. So that sort of led into me asking him lots of questions like, why haven't you asked my name yet? Like, is this supposed to be romantic or is this a friendship thing? Or like, are we ever going to meet? And we met.
Okay, tell me about the first date and when you knew he was the one that you wanted to spend the rest of your life with.
Oh, wow. Well, definitely those did not happen like back to back.
Definitely.
We met and our first date was a complete disaster. Honestly, it was not a good first date. Or at least it wasn't the kind of first date you want to have when you first meet someone that you think, oh, they're so nice. And like, I think he's really sweet and really thoughtful. And, you know, so he's like, well, in Korea, like they often, the first thing they ask is like, how tall are you? And, you know, where did you go to school? And what do you do for work? And where are you from? And so when we met at this big crosswalk. Okay, we decided it was going to be all K-drama style, and we were going to like text each other until we're on opposite ends of the. I know it's so cheesy. I told you.
Did you record it? That's amazing, though.
No, I didn't record it, but it does sound like I should. We're like, it's like I swear my life is a drama script. Okay, drama
script. Or you invite friends to sit on the opposite corners and they record it from their view.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously, we can reenact it. And we were like, it's at Shinchon Station, which is a really big like station, and we were on opposite ends. We were like, okay, are you near exit, whatever, and I'm near exit, whatever. These are subway exits. It's like, okay, well, I'm at the crosswalk and there's like a sea of people. There's no way you can, you know, see. And it was like, okay, when it turns green, we're going to meet in the middle. There was like a median. So that's how we met. Now, we both had pictures of each other, you know, so we could recognize and spot one another. But it was like, I know, it was a total romantic setup. But like, here we are smiling and walking across to the median. And when we get there, I realize, he's like a whole head shorter than me. I was like, okay. And I mentioned, I was like, so you are 5'7", right? So he was just like, yeah. And, you know, that's how it started. It was a little awkward. Yes, he is shorter than me. And we went for a coffee. I thought he was going to take me to dinner, so I was starving. So he's like, no, let's go to this coffee house. And we went to the coffee house, and it was very awkward because it was we didn't even FaceTime or anything before. We just met for the first time. And I think for the first 15 minutes, we didn't talk. And I think we just giggled on the other side of the booth. And
that's,
it was like,
so adorable.
We couldn't even look at each other. Oh. We were like, oh my God, this is so weird. And I was like, I've never done this before. And he's like, I don't meet girls. And I'm like, oh God, this is so fourth grade. So then it was like, okay. So we started asking each other sort of basic questions that you would think we'd get out of the way beforehand. But the reason why it felt like, oh my gosh, this is not a good date was, I would ask him things like, you know, generic things like, what's your biggest dream? Like, what's the dream that you haven't accomplished yet? Or like, you know, where are places that you've traveled to? Or where do you want to go to? Or just, you know, those kind of big swathy questions. And it was like a strikeout every time, because he would be like, oh, a dream? I don't know. I just want to have a nice family and have a good life. And I'm like, what? And then he asked, you know, like what I would ask, oh, where have you traveled to? And I noticed that nothing was really outside, not very far from the Seoul city limits. That's where we were. And so I was like, no, like, you know, like, have you been to, I was like, you're so close to Japan. Have you been to Japan or have you been to China? Like, I'm a globetrotter. And he's like, no. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, okay, well, and he's like, that requires getting on an airplane. And I was like, well, what? You've never been on an airplane? And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. And I'm like, so you don't own a passport? And he's like, no. And I know that sounds really snobby, but for me, like, I was like, okay, there's going to be very little that we have in common, you know?
Yeah, I totally would have been the same way. I completely get it.
It was nuts. It was, I was just like, and I'm like, okay, so what are you reading now? And he's like, manga. And I'm like, no, like real books. Like, or what's your favorite book? And he's like, I don't really have, oh, I have a manga series I really like. I'm like, it was everything that I just was like, okay, we really don't have anything in common. But then we were like, okay, let's get off these topics. And then I was like, you know, let's talk about other things. And I think with all of that, we actually talked till like 6 a.m. And we didn't realize it was 6 a.m. It was nuts. Because in Korea, they don't close. And it's 24/7 there. So they'll like, yes, kick you out, you know? And we both had to literally go home and take a shower and go to work. It was like straight after our date. So it was so confusing. I'm like, okay, how did I speak for like 8 hours to a guy that I don't have anything in common with, you know? So that was our first date. And my friends kept saying like, you know, because I would be like, I feel so bad. I'm going to crush his heart. And they're like, just go out with him. That's my friends. They're like, he's so nice. Just go out with him. Like, aww. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe. And the thing is that he was so nice. I wasn't sure that I was like, I thought I would run over him, you know. But to get to that question of like, when did I know? we were watching TV on the couch at my house, and I think it was like Korean dramas, and they always start like at 10 p.m. And the thing is that I know it's really, they really do start at 10 p.m. because they want you to, they want to wait for everybody to get home from work and for the kids to go down to watch. The viewership will be higher. I know. So we were watching a drama and yeah, sure, I was tired, but what happened was I totally passed out. And the thing is that we were sort of snuggling on the couch and I had my head on his shoulder and I literally passed out. So like unrecollectible that I thought he drugged me. Like it was, because the thing is, I actually have trouble sleeping and I don't sleep very well. So that was really shocking. And, and so I got all mad at him. We had this huge fight and I was like, what did you do? Did you put something in my drink? And like, you know, because like, this is still guy I met off the internet, you know? And I thought the shoe's going to drop. Like he's going to be some crazy person that I don't know about, you know? So I'm like, you know, he's too nice. I couldn't believe it. Right. And we had this huge fight and he's like, what do you think of me? And blah, blah, blah. And we like didn't talk for a week and, you know, and he's just like, are you still thinking I put something in your drink? And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And he's just like, well, you know, we got over it. We had dinner. And so we were watching a drama on the couch, literally same thing. And my head's on his shoulder and we're like, and I fell asleep again like that. Mm. I passed out and I just didn't know what was going on because I don't fall asleep very well. And I think in my processing about it and like, and you know, for me, like I was so bewildered and I was praying about it. And I was like, okay, if this person is a dangerous person, God, I need you to tell me, signal to me something. And instead gave me this picture of peace, like just me being in absolute peace. And it occurred to me that my husband, Hyunsu, was so grounded in the present that he just had this peace around him. And when I fell asleep, it's like I like came into his covering of peace. And it silenced all of the crazy million thoughts in my head that normally keep me up. That's why I can't sleep. It's like I feel like a snow globe in my head when I lay down and I can't. But like his presence, Kensu's presence, when he put his arm around me and I was just near his core, it's like this peace fell all over me. Mm-hmm. And I just felt so safe. I think that's what it was. That I felt so safe. And I don't, you know, I have a past that tells me I'm not safe. You know, I had a really rough childhood, like a lot of abuse, an alcoholic parent, like a lot of things in my life that just told me the world wasn't safe. And because of that, like, I think his peace, that peace around me, like that was just something I didn't realize I needed so much, despite all the things that you would think I was always looking for in a mate. Like, you know, I always want educated, intellectual, funny, blah, 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 adventurous, all that stuff, that it didn't matter. And so in that, when I had that aha, like I started crying and I realized, oh my gosh, it's the very thing that I need to complete me. Very Jerry Maguire. I mean, seriously, it was like, wow, I didn't even know I needed that. And nothing else mattered. Like, it didn't matter. Like, all of the Koreans call them specs, like the specs of a person, they're like all the things that, you know, specifications, like a resume. It didn't matter. And that's when I knew. I was like, I'm gonna marry this man. This doesn't make sense at all, but I know it's the right thing.
My next question, you know, we've kind of talked about this last time we met, but I know this is something that a lot of Asians or Asian Americans struggle with, and it's surrounding the conversation of our moms and what they expect of us. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about navigating both your mom and his mom and just that journey?
So remember when I said my life is like a K-drama, Korean drama? Oh, yeah. I can't watch some of them because it's like so real for me. You know, I know it's dramatized, but that stuff happens, y'all. It's not even funny. Most of the Cinderella stuff does not happen for sure. But so if that doesn't lay a foundation, it's very dramatic. I will say that I don't look back on it fondly, and it was probably one of the most traumatic things I've ever had to walk through in my life. Mm. So, you know, there were, I think some of it is there's cultural things at play with how they're a little funny. Like parents in Korea, there's this sort of dance where they try to one up each other. Like the moms always try to one up the other moms by bragging about their kids. So this is so opposite of Joylet Club in a lot of ways. And then so, you know, but they try to one up each other and they'll say, well, my daughter did this, or my daughter did this, my son did this, or my, you know, my family background is this, and blah, blah, blah. And they do sort of this fronting each other. I noticed this now, like having gone through it, but I saw it in dramas I didn't fully understand. But they front each other to just, you know, say like, at the end of the day, they're wanting to say like, my son is worthy of your daughter, or my daughter is worthy of your son. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of laying it out what happened. But I had invited Hyunsu to Christmas in LA with me. So I was living in, I lived in Korea for 4 years. But in Christmas, my brother lives in the LA area in OC, and I would go home for Christmas. So that would be the one time I would go back to the States when I lived there. So I invited Hyunsu because we were talking about marriage. So I thought, okay, well, let's take him home to meet the parents, right? Like, let's do it. So he came. And my mom was stranger danger all the way, like completely shunning him. She barely even acknowledged his existence the entire Christmas week. It was terrible. And my mom's like, I can't believe, why would you bring, he's not family. And I'm like, I know. Like, but, and there were, I had other cousins there too. So it wasn't my just immediate family. My brother and my cousins were like totally sweet and, you know, encouraging him to not deal with my mom's yuck. But the last day we were there, she like sat us down all serious, Asian mom-like, and started grilling him. And she grilled him about things that honestly, I was like jaw drop, so mad, like so embarrassed, livid. Because she's asking him about, of course, his parents, because your pedigree, your background is so important. And she asked, like, well, what does your mom do? What does your dad do? Like, what's your last name? And which lineage is that last name? And where are they from? And like, just grill, 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 grill. And then she went into this, I had, honestly, like, this is why I was embarrassed. I have since learned about, there's this 7 to 9 level caste system in Korea. This is an ancient caste system based on what they call it, the sacred bone caste system. And of course, it's a lot like, you know, there's like a nobility and there's lords and there's different tiers. And my mom started picking out the fact that he came from the bottommost caste tier of a system that like has not been in like action for over like 1500 years, right? And some people still in Korea pride themselves of that. And now there's like new money caste system there. But, you know, so basically she was belittling him and shaming him that his family was so not worthy, right? And then she started bragging about my dad and my dad's family and her mom's family. And they both came from a sacred bone level, like nobility, right? And my grandfather was a lord and all this stuff. So she would tell him like, well, you should know about her grandfather, and started listing out all these things that I couldn't even understand in Korean, but like, I guess he did. And he still won't tell me what she said, but I just knew she was trying to put him in his place. And I was so mad. And I just was like, I finally had it. And I just said, you know what, mom, this is ridiculous. Like, you're just making him feel completely unwelcome. And this is ridiculous. Like, who even talks about a sacred bone system? Like, you know, are you from the Joseon dynasty? This is, you know, this is the man I'm going to marry. And mind you, she had broken up two engagements in my 20s. Yeah, in my 20s before. Mm-hmm. So she, I was just like, do you not want me to be married? Do you want me to, like, whenever you, it's your dream come true. It's a Korean man. And she's like, yeah, no, like, you can't bring something like that into my home. And she was objectifying him, you know, it was disgusting. So we went back home to Korea and it was terrible. Like, we were both like traumatized. And apparently, of course, his mom, who was totally against him coming to the States at all, like, he told her about what happened. And she immediately, of course, like, told him that he can no longer see me. And, you know, mind you, by this point, I still haven't met them. And for me, I've been brought up that, like, you don't meet the parents until, this is the Korean tradition, until you're like marriage, like when you're thinking marriage partner. And like, I didn't want that pressure. You know, I was like, okay, I want to see if like this works for my family and then we'll maybe think about it. Well, then she threatened Hyunsu with disownment if he ever saw me again, because I was 4 years older. I was American. And apparently my ovaries are too shriveled up to have children. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And like, who is she to blah, blah, blah. And of course, everything my mom said to, you know, through him to them was completely offensive. And so that's the feud that started. And actually it broke us up. It was terrible. It was like, not even just break up. It's like, I think he broke up with me probably like 20 something times. And it was terrible. Cause like, you know, I'd be like, what's going on? I thought we decided this is what we want. And he didn't tell me for a long time that they threatened disownment. He just would say like, we're just not going to work. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? You know? And we'd have this Korean drama style. We'd have this like huge trip to Namisan, which is like this island, Nami Island. It's like romantics where couples go. And then at the end of it, he would try to break up with me in the parking lot. Like, what? They always do these like leave the happiest memory before you break up. Like, it's seriously like a Korean drama. And so I had like 20 something. It was terrible. So yeah, so that was the feud.
And then how did you win the moms?
I don't think we met the moms, really. I don't know. Like, so when we finally, it was like over, I'll tell you, like, it was, you know, even his friends got involved and like, it was, anyways, I can't even, but how did we come? I think it was about 4 or almost 5 months. Yeah. Almost 4 to 5 months that we were broken up. And I went through a really deep depression. Like, I did not eat. I was that girl. I texted him all the time. I tried to call. He never took any of them. He never responded. Yeah, I was pretty broken. And I think one day I had to just kind of pick up the pieces. Like, I was so not okay that I went back home. And I went home and I actually chose to go to Kansas City. That was the last place I had lived. And I went there to sort of restore and refind myself, because clearly I'm like, what happened to me? Like, I'm not even me anymore. And, you know, had just had a lot of time of healing there, and went back to Korea. And one of those things that was me was travel. And one of my roommates was going to Thailand, and we went to Thailand. And I remember one of my friends talking about eat, love, pray. And eat, pray, love, right? Eat, pray, love, right? Mm-hmm. And she was telling about her story, because I was, you know, clearly talking about my boyfriend. And she was telling me about her breakup, and she told me about the book and how that transformed her life. So I went back to Korea and I read the book, and there's this one part in it where she writes out this giant prayer, all sobbing, like biggest prayer ever. And I did that, not in all. And I basically literally wrote out like exactly what I hoped would happen. Like the what he would say, how he would look at me, like, because basically I asked like for us to get back together. And and that was after I had this very vivid dream where he was sitting next to me and had his arm around me. And I think I woke up from that. And that's where I wrote this prayer. So wrote out that prayer, snotty prayer. I still have it in my journal. And I started to seek him out. So I was like, you know what? Like, I really believe this. And I try to go by his work after work. And he wasn't there. And I went by his house. And I was thinking, okay, he should be coming home about now, right? Or I don't know what's going on. And one of those days, his mom walked up the stairs because he still lived at home. And this was actually, you know, Hyunsu did. He actually opened the door one day he was home. And it was this very sad yet happy, melancholic moment that we were having. And I was just like, look, I just want to, if we are going to end this, I don't want to end it like the way we did. But if there is something that we have, I think it's, you know, it's worth the time that and the love that we have for each other to explore it. And let's make an adult decision and not have it be this dramatic thing. So we just finished that and I was like, okay. And we had decided like maybe we can meet for coffee. And I was happy that he was willing to do that. And as I was turning around, his mom starts coming up the stairs. Like they lived in this villa, this multi-story villa, the building that they own. And they lived on the second floor at the time. So I was like, oh, Shiza. Thinking like, and he like, she looks at me, she looks at him. And I don't know that she's seen a picture of me or not, but we had not met.
Wow.
And she's like, well, don't just stand in the hallway. You're welcome to come in. And I was like, no, I'm actually on my way out. And then she looks at me again and she's like, so you're that girl, right? And I was like, yes. And I think if that's who you think I am. And she's like, I see. Okay, well, you can either come in or I guess you're leaving. And I was like, I'm leaving. So I left. So then Hyunsu and I had coffee and I get a phone call from her. Like, I didn't know it was her. I just got this phone call, a number I didn't know.
While you're at coffee?
No, not while I'm at coffee, maybe like the day after. Mm-hmm. And I got this phone call of a number I didn't know. I pick it up and it's his mom. So apparently she said, give me her phone number. And all she says is, on Friday, I want you to show up at this place. We're going to have dinner and we're going to talk whether or not you're going to get married. And I was like, what? Like, I only just had coffee for the first time in 5 months after a totally traumatic breakup that you designed. And now you're telling me to show up 24 hours after the first time I actually sat down and talked with my former boyfriend, whether or not we're going to get married. So that's what started it all back up again. Like, we barely had a chance to even say we're going to get back together or if we were, and she's already cramming marriage down my throat.
I know. That's the thing about freaking Asian parents.
Your parents do that too?
Okay. Mine wasn't that dramatic.
Okay.
I'm still single, but they did go from you're not allowed to date till after college to immediately after, like, we are praying for your future husband. And I was like, excuse me?
Right. I know. Right? Oh my gosh. What in the world? And then like my mom's a little hot and cold like that. She's like, oh no, like, you know, you will only marry a Korean man and blah, 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 blah. And you're going to have X amount of children. And then she'll be like, you know, you can't see boys. Like, you can't get married yet until you get your PhD. And I'm like, okay, so when I'm like 40 something, because like basically that's what you're telling me. And basically that's the track she had me on. I'll tell you that for sure. So yeah, Asian moms are kind of intense. And I think her agenda too, is she told me when at dinner, she was just like, listen, you are too old for my son, but if you guys are going to do this and you're going to get back together, it's only because you're going to get married. So then she wanted us to get married the next month. It was ridiculous.
Wait, did you do it?
No, no, but like we did get married within months. It was like insanity. We literally had coffee and then we had to like immediately start like looking for wedding halls because they wanted us to do it. And okay, like make it even more dramatic. So my mom had come to Korea that summer. Okay. And she came because she was getting some treatments done, but then she also had this, I think, agenda. I think my brother told me in retrospect that he was just like, well, you know, your sister is getting old. And if she wants to marry this person, I need to meet her parent, his parents. So she came to Korea explicitly to also meet his parents, but we were broken up. And oh my God. Okay. Anyways, I don't even want to go there. Like what that was like. But so like we had this, my mom and I, this is before we got back together. Okay. Like I kid you not, like a week before Kensu opened that door, I was having dinner with my mom. And mind you, I'm also pretty much estranged from my mom. So like, mm-hmm. I barely had a relationship with her. And she's like, let's have dinner. I'm in Korea. And I'm like, oh, you live in Arizona and you did not even announce you were coming. Okay. Like, so we had dinner and she's like, you lost a lot of weight. And I'm like, yes. And she's like, okay. And so where is this person? And you know, we had broken up and I told her, I was like, well, we're not together anymore. And then she started ripping up him again and his family and all that stuff. And I just, it was terrible. And so week later, opens door and go to dinner with now Hyunsu's mom, who's telling us to get married within a month. So then we had to go find, so then it was like, Hyunsu and I are like, oh my God, like, okay, what do we do? Like, she is here. My mom is here. And she went down to Busan, which is about 3.5 hours away. She's like, she went down to Busan and she doesn't know we're together again. And she is in Korea. So it would be opportune if we're getting married for the moms to meet, which is a big deal when you're getting married. Moms are supposed to meet. And there's a whole thing. But so, yeah. So we booked a train that like one night we just were like after work, we just booked the train and we went down to Busan to try to meet her. And anyways, there's way more drama still there. My mom's not a very nice person, but eventually they did meet.
And they survived it.
They survived it, but it was also like one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever done because my mom's being all hoity. His mom is like, honestly, his mom is not like the leave it to beaver kind. It's like the Korean version, you know, like she's very, like she does come from very humble, like upbringing. She doesn't hide that either. And I love that. She's very no nonsense, very matter of fact. She's very blunt, but she's also like not, it's, you know, she's not like as controlling as my mom. She's just more like, well, I really don't want to do this. And she'll just kind of lean on you, lean on you, and lean on you to try to, but she's super kind. So she's this like, she's dressed Ajumma style, which, you know, that's what you call married women there, with like rhinestones and multicolors and like permed hair and glasses. And my mom's like dressed in a suit and being not approachable. But yeah, they met and they had the most uncomfortable conversation. Because my mom's not, I don't know what religion she is now, but she was definitely Catholic before. But another Korean thing, things I learned, is that they set wedding dates. A lot of them set wedding dates based on shamans identifying your lucky days for marriage.
Wow.
Yeah. So then Hensi's mom brings that up. And normally it's the bride's mom that's supposed to go see the shaman and do all this stuff. And it was bananas. So like, definitely I learned I'm not very Korean. That was there. But yeah, so that was the kind of stuff there, and like they had to decide that we were not. They also have a dowry thing, a whole dowry thing, and it's like up to hundreds of thousands of dollars of gifts that you're supposed to give each other in money.
Wow.
Mostly the wife's family actually is supposed to give it to the husband's family. It's like so backwards. Like, here, I'll pay you to take my daughter. That's basically what it is. Like buying mink coats and all this stuff. And but like the husband's side is supposed to like buy us a whole apartment and furnish everything. And anyways, that's like hundreds of thousands of dollars plus the wedding, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't do any of that. And yeah. That's the kind of crazy dynamic. My mom's definitely more American than Korean. I'll say that. No.
You're like American mixed with K-drama.
Yeah. No, I know. I was just like, might as well put a blonde bop on me. Like, I had no idea what the heck was going. I'm like, what do you mean go like shaman, you know, ask the shaman if that's a good date, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So you guys literally went overnight from we might get back together to, oh, we're talking wedding dates.
Yeah. And I remember my sister-in-law getting so mad at me. She's like, why can't you just like, why are you rushing this? Are you pregnant? And I was like, what? We literally only had coffee. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. The rest of our time has been booked out, checking, like being touring all these wedding halls. And I was like, and I don't even know if we're getting back together. Like, we're not. And she's like, are you engaged yet? I don't think you're like, he proposed. I was like, apparently they don't really do that in Korea. Like, they really don't. Like, proposing is like it's like you're super lucky if someone proposes with a ring there. It's just you normally like you just decide like a contract. You're like, hey, we're getting married, right? And you make it official by the mom's meeting. It's like weird. So yeah, it was insanity, girl. And we got married. I mean, there's so many times that his mom called to disown us, like because of the date even. But we pushed as far as we could. And I wanted it to be a date that my brother could come. And we did it. It was actually a Thanksgiving weekend in America. And I felt bad that he couldn't spend the whole weekend with his family, but he came with my mom to a Korean wedding. And that was November 17th, 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. Behind every healthy relationship is two people that have done their own work. And you mentioned that you'd kind of come from a rough past. And I was just wondering, and even as we've talked in this conversation, the drama between the moms and all of that, what has been one of the most helpful tools or things that you've done personally on your own journey?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, therapy. Mm-hmm. That is like, I mean, I know that different people have different levels of difficulty with things, but if you definitely have trauma, and if you're like, what's trauma? I'm not sure if I have trauma. Like, there's different levels of trauma, but like, if you are waking up in cold sweats, if you get triggered and go into bouts of depression, if you like have fears that freeze you up, like there's trauma involved. And for me, definitely counseling at different points in my life. And some of actually the deepest counseling or therapy I've received has not been from a licensed counselor. And so, you know, while if you look it up on Google, it might seem so controversial, but I know that I have had a lot of healing with prayer counseling and different forms of that. And I don't know. Yeah. So I would say that those have been the most pivotal, the most breakthrough giving tools that I've received to be able to deal with like a lot of the trauma.
You recently started an incredible consulting business, Daringly Great.
Yes.
I would love for you to share what made you start this business and what it's about.
Yeah. Well, it is a leadership and team coaching and consulting service. Now that's a mouthful. But, you know, really my vision for this business is to redefine leadership. Now I'm going to back up. And this does lead, you know, is related to why I started it and how this all came to be. I had a consulting business for about 12 years alongside working with different companies. And most recently, I've been working in tech startups here in Austin. But I got to the point where going Mach 2 with your hair on fire was destroying my marriage and destroying my health. And honestly, like, I was not aligned. And that, I think, is what was wreaking more havoc than anything. And so last July, I started this company, sort of restarting. I folded my previous consulting practice and not working in startups anymore, and found a world that I have been sort of observing on the sidelines for about 5 years of online entrepreneurs who really went into it wanting life balance and trying to prioritize the things we say we're supposed to prioritize, like family. And were more impact driven than it was just profit driven, making decisions that I felt more was in alignment with my personal values. And so that my business solely serves online entrepreneurs now who are impact purpose driven, who do seek true, not the quote unquote life, true, work life balance, but true work life balance, and prioritize whole health, including the family. And that's what I try to model as well. And definitely into it, very excited to have made this shift. And it's given me the opportunity to realign with myself and really spend a lot of quality time with my husband. Yeah, it's been so good. Like, I wouldn't have it any other way.
How can we go about loving our team and coworkers like family and balancing that with your real family?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I find interesting that I learned in startup, but also learned the shadow side in startup, is that when you're around people where you are aligned in values, where you are aligned in purpose, like building something in the same, and you're going in the same direction, where you really care for one another instead of have it be this transactional relationship, like, you build real bonds, right? And I experienced a lot of that when I worked in nonprofits. I experienced a lot of that working in very for-purpose type organizations. And I would say that, you know, to be honest, when I went and worked with startups, a lot of my attraction to it was seeing my curiosity that this private sector was exploring that, like, values driven, culture driven, people are first, right? And have made some of my closest friends even in the last 5 years through that, right? Now, I did feel like family with them, you know, like, I felt like family with them. But, you know, when your family bond breaks the moment that you no longer work there, it just sort of shakes you up. You know, I've definitely, suddenly people that I spent basically 24/7 with in the startup realm, like, as soon as a decision was made, that then, you know, I or someone else would no longer be part of that company, it's like you were disowned. And I felt that. And that felt very wrong, to be honest, because it was like all the feels and all the things that you think are connecting. And you just, I don't know, it does a head job on you, I'll tell you that. And I'll say too, like, one of the things with that, lessons I learned that then I'll share with you, like, how I apply that to online entrepreneurs is, you know, when you're drinking the Kool-Aid of startup world, you know, where every, like, your lunches are catered, you breakfast tacos, like, happy hours, dinner stuff all the time, sponsored and not sponsored, you end up actually spending a lot of time with your coworkers. That's why it feels like family. And if you actually count up the hours, it was like many X times over the time I spent with my own actual family. Now, I think that's great for a lot of people who are single, who don't have like a nuclear unit here, but I saw that to be like, that's part of what was damaging my relationship with my husband. And it's not that I mean, granted, I can have better boundaries, but there is a lot of peer pressure to be part, you know, and there was a lot of making fun of and shunning and basically leaving out people who had families and children and who chose to go home, you know? So anyways, trying to learn from those experiences and taking the good parts and pulling that and teaching people who are creating and running their own businesses as solopreneurs, as online entrepreneurs, even brick and mortar, small business owners. Apparently, small business owners, anyone under 10 million is small business owner. Can you believe it? So small business owners, it's that, you know, I saw the power of when you are able to align in vision and purpose and values and really create and foster genuine relationships with people that you're working with, and that there is a genuine care there for one another, that sometimes things got more intense, just like family. Sometimes things too, though, I saw such devotion to projects and the kind of devotion that you would see that in a family, right? Mm-hmm. Like the care and the devotion, how much people actually cared. And the interesting thing that I find with my clients, oftentimes they say, I don't know how to make them care. Like, why don't they care about my business the way that I do? And I firsthand have seen when you create a space that does feel like family, people care. And they don't just care because it's about money. They care because it's the right thing to do, right to do by your team, right to do for the purpose and the cause, right for the family, etc. And yeah, but one of the things I really admire about a lot of successful online entrepreneurs, and I'm not saying that there aren't successful ones that don't do this or that, yeah, is that there's still this fierce, my family comes first, you know? And I think that that's what's missing in the startup realm. It's like, I see executives who have children and I mean, sometimes I'm like, wow, you probably struggle with a lot of mom guilt or like this family never goes home or like, I no wonder people have affairs. Like I just, you know, girl, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't want to know about people. But yeah, I thought, okay, I can serve these people because that's what I want to put first. And yet like create an incredible team experience that is gratifying, not just because you get a paycheck, but gratifying because you have a unified purpose and you have genuine relationships, right? And I call that transformational leadership versus transactional leadership. Transactional meaning like dollars for hours, like, clock in, clock out. I'm going to give you $25 an hour for that work, right? Versus transformational, meaning like, I see you and I want to invest myself, not even just my money, but my time and my heart into you like, as the business owner to people on the team, and invite you into a relationship with me and create this win-win situation.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you wish more leaders knew about running a business or building a team?
You know, there's like several sort of shifts that I help a lot of the leaders I work with make. And these are some shifts that I've also helped startup leaders make as well. It's a little harder for them because I think money, it's very money driven, right? And that's pretty much the norm for the industry. It's like how you establish how successful you are, right? But I think it's really about seeing people as an investment and not an expense. I think a lot of people, like today I was on a call, I'm going to go speak at a mastermind, and I was listening about the ladies there, and there was several of them were having a tough time even trying to outsource something at $3 an hour to someone in the Philippines. And it's, I'm not shaming this person. I just think $3 an hour is like so much money that will change the life of this person, like radically change the life of this person, right? It's a privilege to be able to invite someone into a working relationship with you. And on top of that, be able to award them with that amount of money, right? Which is still a lot in the Philippines. And your Starbucks costs more than the $3 for someone to work their tail off because they're so grateful for the $3 an hour, you know? And because this person was seeing it as this expense, right? And it's funny that people don't see a Starbucks as an expense. They just, it's like an entitlement. Like, of course, like, I'm not even going to look at how much it is, right? Like, I'm not even going to look at how much it is before I buy it. Yes, venti size it. Like, dude, that just, it just blows my mind. So it's like, that's a shift that I would wish for any business owner, whether you outsource overseas, whether you work with people here, that if you see that, well, number one is purpose over paycheck, 100%, hands down. If you have the right purpose and it aligns with them, this person's going to like work for you for free, right? It's not about how much you pay them. But secondly, that you have to start with a mindset of the opportunity for you to invite someone into a relationship with you and your business is a privilege. And it's also an investment. And it's never going to be a waste. And it would be a waste if you look at it as an expense, you know? Then you start counting the minutes and like you start like saying, oh, well, you know, your mistake that had to correct three times cost me 3x more to do that. Like, I mean, you start thinking of it that way, right? And I think that's a shame because when you do it that way, you're objectifying this person's contribution and you're never going to get the best out of, you know, out of someone. You're never going, they're not going to care about you if you don't care about them. They're definitely not going to care about your business if you don't care about them. So it's, you know, it's a shift that I think would radically change. And it's not just saying like, okay, well, I'm just going to start calling it an investment, you know, it's a life disposition.
Right.
Your business, you create it from your place of passion and you create it from this idea. Entrepreneurs create things that were never created before. Like we create things that never existed before, right? It's energy. So if you are inviting other people's energy into your business, then let it be this kind of summative power, like have it be something that is greater together than siloed into these separate minutes, right?
Yeah.
So, and the only way to do that is to approach it as a relationship, to approach it as an investment of not just your money, but also you, right?
Right. How does your husband support you in your business now?
You know, this is so interesting. It's like full circle for where we started. So remember how I said that he was so grounded and just in the, he is very present oriented. It's almost infuriating because I'm so all about planning the future and I evaluate the past. And then, you know, I'm probably not so present, but because it's remember how he's so safe and he has that peace and he has that groundedness. Well, this entrepreneurial life, as you know very well, Sophie, it's hard. It's not, it is the constant evaluation of the past and reckoning with it and trying to plan the future and not have being lost you know, and then trying to be so present in the moment. But you're just, it's like you're split a million ways. And it's really cool to think that as I decided to move away from working in startups or even being on airplanes and living out of suitcases constantly with consulting, that he plays that role for me in this business. Is mm-hmm. that, you know, I can, we call it actually recharge time. So he knows, like, he'll be like, I think you need recharge time. And like, literally all that means is like, he's just holding on to me and I'm just can just sink into him. And I literally feel so recharged by being just enveloped by that peace. And it's amazing.
So sweet.
Oh, thank you. I know, I feel so lucky, you know, like, oh, like, and I don't think I could do what I'm doing now without it, you know, and trying to stay true to myself instead of going. I mean, I get the rules of the world. I know how to climb the corporate ladder. I know how to schmooze. I'm trying to zag when people are zigging. I know the rules to zig, and I'm saying I want to zag. And that requires so much more alignment and peace and groundedness than ever before. And that's what he does for me and feeds me. I'll tell you that.
That's
my love language. He's a chef. Ugh. So he feeds me amazing food and makes sure that I'm, you know, because I'm the type that will, if I start working, like, I won't even know if I'm hot or cold or thirsty or eating. Like, it's like I went into a time warp.
I know. I'm the same way. So it's so helpful having someone else do the meal prepping.
Yes, I know. I mean, I wish it was every day. It's only like 2 days a week when he's off. But like, yeah. But even then, it's like he'll text me and be like, you need to eat. And then he's like, text me again. You didn't eat yet. I know you didn't eat. Go down, get off the computer and go eat. Like, so yeah. So just, you know, such an anchor for me, and I'm very grateful. And it's funny to think like that the very reason I married him, like that now this is the very thing that keeps me grounded as I'm building this business and the vision that I have moving forward.
Well, where can our incredible listeners find you if they want to find out more about Daringly Great?
Yes. Well, I am always on Instagram. So if you find me on Daringly Great Consulting, but also on Facebook and on website, daringlygreat.com.
Wonderful. And I think you had a little gift you wanted to give our listeners.
I do. So as you know, I really love to help people level up in their leadership abilities and their mindset, but most importantly, team. And so my gift is the Ultimate Dream Team Hiring Roadmap, and it's for free. And it's really just broken out step by step of, to be honest, like the exact steps that I use to identify, attract, pick out, and hire dream team members. And the process, if you follow it, you won't waste your time. And it's actually the same exact process that we used in startups. And you know, like Google, Facebook, you know, all, Dropbox, all these places that have awesome, amazing people. The little secret is this: find them, hire them, keep them. That's Google's find them, hire them, train them, keep them. That's their Google's people ops thing. And they really do look for, they don't look necessarily for like the specs and the checklist. What they look for is raw talent, eagerness, alignment with values, culture fit, and, you know, people who are eager to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think those attributes are more important than, do you know this software system? Mm-hmm. You know? And so then when they come in and they look like, I like what Seth Godin says in his latest book. I don't know if you've read it yet. It's called This Marketing. He says something in there, and he says it in the form of marketing, but I think honestly, hiring is another form of marketing. It's internal marketing, right?
Right.
And he says, the stronger you define and make the statement of people like this do things like this, that you can create a tribe around that. And I feel like the same principle is applicable to recruiting and hiring the right people, right? I think most people have conflict with the wrong people because when you're trying to hire for someone that's going to work intimately with you and be family, then you probably want to hire the people that are like you. So defining people like this, like, what are your values? What is your culture like? What are these expectations? Like, what are people like this like? And what do they do? Do things like this. Mm-hmm. And if you can identify that and hire with that in mind, you're going to have, no doubt, an incredible team.
That's really powerful because I definitely have made some team mistakes. And so even hearing you talk about this, looking back, I'm like, yep, definitely made that mistake. Definitely could have done that better. So I will definitely be going on to download the Dream Team Hiring Roadmap. I just wanted to take a moment, Teresa, to acknowledge you and just first of all say thank you for reaching out to me on Instagram. I think LinkedIn first, but my life has not been the same since I met you. Aww. And I just really cherish you, but also the light that you are in the industry. You're right, startups are extremely kind of brutal and can be extremely toxic. But I love what you're doing now in empowering leaders to build their dream team, to be in alignment with themselves, to put their family first, because truly everything else follows if the right things are in place. Mm-hmm. And so just thank you for the work that you do, the voice that you are, the way that you're empowering leaders, because they're leading a lot of people and they're either doing it well or poorly.
Oh, thank you, Sophie. You're like making me tear up. No, I'm so pleased that we were able to meet and we will continue to have our coffee dates. Yes. But thank you so much for inviting me to talk about my story and, you know, share about that. And of course, I want everyone to have that peaceful anchor. So go find your, go find my version of my husband. It's pretty great.
Yes. What is the best relationship advice you've ever been given or could give?
Yeah, I have one. If you're still asking, if you believe in the whole, if he's the one, if she's the one or whatever, like if you're still asking, then he or she is not it.
Dang. How long would you give the person?
Well, like if you're asking if he's the one starting the first date, you're being really premature. Like you don't know anything about this person. But like if you've been with this person, like whether it's been in, and I believe this too, like sometimes I've seen a lot of my friends end up marrying their best friends who were completely platonic for a long time. But there's a moment where I feel like you start asking yourself, like imagining, could I do this for the rest of my life, right? Because you already have these patterns with somebody. And, you know, daydream and all stuff. But if you're like racked with the, if he's the one, if she's the one, like question, like, first of all, my philosophy is that you can have many ones, you know, it's compatibility and choices. I know I'm romantic, but that I don't think that there's just one person you're ever made to like ever be with. So, and then like your criteria as based on my story, like it is not a checklist. There's something that Jerry Maguire, like that completes you, that makes you feel whole. Like it's this yin and yang kind of effect, right? And I think that's why opposites attract, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I get it more now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not just that, like, you know, he likes black and I like white. It's not like that. It's, there's a complementary effect, right? And yeah. Can I add one more?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Some people might like hate me for saying this, but I'll say that it's not about all the fire. Like, it's not about the passion and the fire.
I wholeheartedly believe that.
Mm-hmm. Like, some people are like, what do you mean? Like, if I don't think I can jump their bones all the time, like, how am I supposed to live with them for the rest of my life? And I'm like, you know, some people have that. I've seen that in marriage. Like, some people really do have that. But oftentimes the people who have the passionate relationships also fight like cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. And, there's not life compatibility, as much. And yeah, that's, I think, more important for a depth of relationship. I mean, not saying that you can't have fire with your mate, like, that's not it. I'm saying that if that is the, like, first, a lot of people do that, like, the very beginning, it's like, oh, I don't feel chemistry or I don't feel attraction. Like, that's not, I don't think that's the right way to meter whether someone is a life mate for you or not.
Right. Sometimes they might be shorter than you.
Yeah, like a whole head. Yeah, no, sometimes they're shorter than you. Sometimes they're not like what, you know, I think Disney screwed us up. Like, I listened to that podcast and I'm totally in alignment. I was like, oh my gosh, so true. Now, Disney, so I'm always trying to get my nieces like, don't fall in love with Prince Charming, because I'll be like, they're like, when I get married, I want to marry the Prince Charming. And I'm like, no, you don't. No, really, you don't. He's pretty lame. Don't do it.
Don't fall in love with the nerd because he brings up the bank. Just kidding.
Well, you know, there's actually another thing. Can I share another one?
This is, yes, we can talk forever.
My 40s. But like, here's another one. And I didn't really understand this one when I got it. I got this in my 20s. And they said, I remember what I used to say about it too. They would say, so one of my mentors would say, monkey, don't, like, I know you're attracted to the monkey man, but you're going to marry the khaki pants. And I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, you know, the real charismatic one that's really fun, that's on stage, that everybody loves to talk to. It's like super fun. Everybody's always attracted to them. Like, he's hot or whatever. That monkey man, like, you know,
the camp counselor.
Right? You call him the camp counselor. That's so funny. Wow. Not all my camp counselors were like that, but
most of them are. The ones that everyone likes, like, totally a monkey man.
Oh, really? Oh, that's true. Actually, that's true. I always liked the mysterious ones. Mm. Like, that was my thing. But like, they always said, like, oh, the monkey man, like, you girls always fall for the monkey man. Like, all the movies feature the monkey man. Like, and they're like, stop falling for the monkey. They're like, you can like the monkey man, you can date the monkey man, but you're going to marry the khaki pants. And I was like, what? Like, and we would joke around and say pleated or flat, like, front. It makes a difference. And yeah. Skinny. And this person specifically was just, you know, she was actually one of the ones that ended up marrying her best friend. And he was very, and actually he did wear khaki pants now that I remember.
Okay. How would you describe the khaki pants person though?
Oh, so me or what most people would call this person?
I mean, either. I'm just like, what does that definition even mean? I totally understand what a monkey man is.
But when I was like, when I was just crushing on a bunch of boys and all that stuff, we would call him boring. The one that's like, oh, he's so nice, but like, there's no, like, he's just too nice. Like, very easy, like, kind of could be a pushover. I wish he would have a backbone. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that they do. I'll tell you, my husband has a backbone for sure. I thought I'd run over him. And I was like, the first time he stood up to me, I was like, ooh, okay, I could do this.
You're like, you know? Yeah,
so don't underestimate the nice ones. That's for sure. So, like, what else? What do we call him? We would say, like, I mean, kind of sometimes the nerd, right? Not always the nerd. He was always the safe one, the friend zone.
The safe one.
Yeah, the safe one you would friend zone. The one that, like, Like, you're not sure, like, if he'll show up to the party if you invite him. Like, oh, and it's like, oh, you came. Or the one that gets the stable job that, like, you know, is the one that sort of cross. They're like, do they follow the rules? Yeah. I don't know if I'm painting. Am I painting the picture you're in your head for you?
Yeah, you are. And now I'm like, I bet people are wondering, they're like, why do I have to marry the khaki pants guy?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's basically saying, like, don't underestimate khaki pants. Right. Like I said, you think that they don't have a backbone, and maybe some of them don't, you know, but like some of them do.
They're the good ones that do.
Yeah. And you think that they wouldn't ever get mad at something. And sometimes they're the scariest. and let's see. And I'll tell you this, like, having a stable guy is nice for a change.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of guys you've been around, Sophie, but like, I had a lot of drama.
Well, I used to joke and say that when people ask me what was my type, I would say the camp counselor. And now I'm learning. I'm learning that's not necessarily what I want.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Girl, like, all the monkey boys, all the monkey men, well, monkey boys, for sure. I had crushes on all of them, for sure. Like, yeah, like long time infatuations where I'd be like, oh my God, imagine I'd get married to them, you know, oh yeah, all that. But, you know, I've also dated some and oof.
Good to know.
Drama. It's like drama. But like, I mean, seriously, like, cause they're exciting because they're always trying different things, but that also signals instability, to be honest. Like, you don't know, like, they may not be committed to coming to hang out with your friends, or like they change their plans a lot, or you know, it's not to say that they're all like infidels, but oftentimes their eyes are roaming more because there are way more women. I mean, this could be the same for, like, reverse it for, you know, guys and girls, or like way more women throwing themselves at them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
And even the safe boys, I'll tell you that. Like, my sister-in-law, she would tell me, yeah, sometimes I see, she's talking about my brother. Sometimes I see him, his eyes rolling, and I just go, hey, hey, hey. And I'm like, what? I would be so mad. And she's like, no. She's like, I know him too well. And basically she's saying he's khaki pants. Like, he won't do anything. You know what I mean? So even Mr. Khaki Pants' eyes wander, right? But the monkey men actually do something about it. And that's not what you want to marry. Cool.
Yeah, right. Last question. What does love or love intently mean to you?
So confession. I think I saw you listed on a TechStars panel. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And I saw Love Intently, and I thought, wow, what a great name. And that's actually what drew me to looking you up and sending you a message, because I thought, I really like that statement. And I will say, for me, it's, I mean, I kind of tend to be an intense person. So that is all kinds of me right there. But Love Intently is, I think it's about loving yourself well first, so that you know how to love somebody else. So it's very golden rule, you know? And if you don't know how to truly love yourself, and I'm not talking about, oh, go do self-care. It's more like, do you know how to respect yourself, or to know how to hear your real desires and your wishes? Like, are you willing to stand up for what you believe and have the boundaries and make hard choices that are true to you? Because I think if you know how to do that well, then you can do that for others better. And I think it's a really backwards thing. And maybe it comes from the, you know, Western Christian sort of background, but the whole idea of not being selfish and trying to serve others first, that's how you show love. And I'm thinking, dude, if you don't know what love is and God is love, and you don't know what love feels like, just being you, then you can't love others. And yeah. I think people try to find love by learning how to love somebody else first. And I'm saying you have to learn how to love God and receive love from God. Learn how to love yourself so you can love others. And I'm not talking about becoming narcissistic. It's there's something there that if you, so that's what love intently means for me.
Yeah, that's so, so, so needed and powerful. I know it's something that I've personally struggled with as a recovering too. But also I think so much of the Christian language, because I would say there's a big amount of people that need to hear that message of learning how to love others. But I also think that those people are struggling with that because they haven't learned how to love themselves first.
Yeah, truly. I know. I know it could be taken all the wrong way, but yeah. And two, there's another saying that you are like, and I really believe this, and this is something I know I'm actively working on a lot, is that anything in your environment is really a reflection of what's inside. And if you don't know love on the inside, meaning with yourself, with God, then the love that you are exhibiting outside of yourself, like, that might not be true love. Like, if you have not learned to truly love yourself, like, then that form of love actually falls short of what love is possible or what love could be. And so that's just something to chew on. And that if you focus so much on the outward expression of love and you don't feel that on the inside, you end up, I don't know, there's like this self-worth transaction that happens. Like, I am not, it's almost saying like, I am not worthy of love, but you are. And so I'm going to therefore give you love. And so if there's some balance there for people to think about, for, because I see, as someone who used to register as a two, so I've been recovered from being a two, that was part of my story, was that I didn't feel like worthy of love. And I loved and served other people in some backwards way to, in hopes that someone would love me back that way, because I didn't know how to love myself. Does that make sense?
Like, absolutely.
Yeah. So it was like this desperate desire to be loved. And so I'm loving on other people because, and then hoping that someone will do the same for me. But that actually never happened.
Yeah. And you're always just giving from an empty place.
Yeah. And it's exhausting. I don't know. Aren't you tired, Sophie?
Oh, totally. I've been tired so much. Which is why we're in recovery.
And it's, you know, it's healthy. You can be a healthy too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I believe that. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to have this time with you.
Thank you so much for listening, friends. From the bottom of my heart, I just deeply cherish and have deep gratitude for every single one of you who tune in week after week. If this episode resonated with you and you think it'll inspire someone else in your life, share it with them. You could make their day or even their week. I hope you enjoyed this episode and took as much out of it as I did Teresa is an incredible woman and a leader that I think more people should follow, because let's be honest, there aren't that many great leaders teaching the things that she's teaching and having the values and standpoint that she does. And I have personally worked in very toxic corporate environments and really hope that by the time my kids are in the workforce, which I do not have kids yet, but when I do, they are working in a far less toxic environment. And I think it starts with people like Teresa empowering and inspiring one leader at a time. And she's doing that phenomenally. So even if you don't have a business or you're not near close at a time where you're building your team, follow her. You will gain so much insight. She hosts one-on-one intensives. She does VIP days and she does retreats, as well as her online coaching program. And those are all things that I couldn't recommend more. So be sure to check it all out. Her links are on our show notes. And yeah, thanks for listening, friends. Until next time, with love and intention.